Do I have everybody's attention now?
Now it's time for Jason Martin and Vol for Life Ramon Foster.
Powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors.
Together, they are J-Mart and Ramon on 104.5 The Zone.
.702-1045 The Zone. J-Mart and Ramon, hour number two of three. I almost said it's our last few hours of the week, and I realized it's just Thursday. Not taking that demerit.
That is demerit.
No, it's not when you catch yourself.
That is demerit.
And I caught myself after the last segment, too.
Are we going to have this discussion here? That's Ramon Foster trying to save himself right now. At Ramon Foster on Twitter. We're at JMart and Ramon. I'm at JMart Radio. Schaefer's at Schaefer on Sports. His first name's Jonathan. Yeah. Without an H. I know how you feel about that, Schaefer. I wanted to make sure that was clear.
Well, there's an H in Jonathan, just not an extra
that's right.
H.
That's right, there is.
There's not two H's.
That is demerit.
Take that, buddy.
We got Anthony Heron coming up, final segment of this hour. SiriusXM College, former Iowa Hawkeye, former Detroit Lion, former Nashville Cat, and fellow Lost enthusiast. Anthony Heron will join us. All right, so make your case, Ramon.
I'm making my case. So if anybody knows me, I am a music buff, okay? If I'm doing anything, I got music playing. So me knowing songs and knowing facts about songs is something that I enjoy. I said that was Ashanti's song, I'm Real, when we came back in on the last segment. I was wrong, and Schaef gave me a demerit, but I wasn't all the way wrong, though. I knew I wasn't, so... What happened was the song was written, given to Jennifer Lopez. But before the song was given to her, Ashanti sang it for her to show her how to do it. And some of Ashanti's vocals were left in that song. Now that you heard that, you will not be able to unhear it because I hear a lot of Ashanti in the chorus of it. And I think if for anything, my demerit should be taken away or I should be given a half demerit or something. The Music City Musical... Okay, I'll take that one. Okay.
Woo!
Rocky was right. You guys
That's
are full against
on
me
Nature
today.
Boy reaction it to is. That one. There's nothing else right there. Woo! Gene.
I'm taking away my brewing out with you later. Okay.
You already took away my gift card.
I did.
And he does give gift cards because he sent me one a few days ago.
Yeah, you bring in that sweet pumpkin spice, man. Of course, I'm always paying it forward. I like that.
Any word from Moon Pie?
No word from Moon
that's
Pie.
That's real disappointment.
But we do have a new member
that's right.
of Team Pumpkin
yeah,
Spice.
Yeah, I need to tell Buck Rising of A to Z Sports and Will Bowling right here at 104.5 The Zone this information. Bree Smith, weather guru, meteorologist at News Channel 5, big Pumpkin Spice fan, said she would be the mascot for hashtag 615 Pumpkin Spice Mafia, which is what I'm bringing out this fall.
That can be a thing.
Oh, I know it can.
I'm for it, okay? As long as I'm not dressing up as a pumpkin. I'll tell you that right now.
I understand. But you did say we're doing Halloween costumes, so.
We are.
All of those are happening.
I'm looking forward to that. And we have to take a picture to show the world that we're into it, I'm for it, okay?
Whatever we got to do, man. Whatever we got to do. We're on Twitter at JMartanRamon. I just tweeted out from that account, and I need to retweet it from my own while I'm at it. Does Ramon Foster deserve a demerit for not remembering that he played NFL football with our previous guest, Rocky Boyman?
I was young at the time, guys.
Trash. That is the sauciest of nug.
Saucy nugs.
Saucy nugs. You know what? I hope I catch you guys walking down steps, okay? That's all I'm saying. A little push might happen.
Good Lord, man.
Don't you put that evil on me, Rocky Boyman!
That just got real out of control.
Dude, Schaef is dying.
Schaefer literally almost fell back in his chair behind the glass. I don't know if we would have heard it, but we definitely heard the...
Wow! You want to talk about escalating. Holy crap.
We're talking about demerits. We're all having fun, and you're like, man. Don't let me get in a back alley with you.
I'll push your down the stairs.
Goodness gracious.
You know what? I'm not a violent guy. I just like to use that little saying of mine just to let you know how serious it could get.
That's a saying of yours?
Yeah, I'll push you down some steps. But I'd never do that. Hey, I'm not a fan of lawsuits or inflicting pain on people not on the football field.
Like you said, lawsuits first. Then you got to the pain portion. Like, I don't want to lose money. And I guess I don't want to hurt you either.
No, I was paid to do that, and I'm good now.
Steelers, we always knew the Steelers were dirty.
But not us. Thank you. That's three for him this morning, by the way.
No. We'll explain the demerit system before the end of the show. I heard this yesterday, really good conversation on Midday 180, which follows us from 9 to 1. They were discussing, guys, Khalif Raymond and the problem at the fourth wide receiver spot. That, well, look, Khalif didn't play very well on Monday night. He dropped a couple of balls. They were both fairly difficult passes, but you expect a receiver in the NFL to make those plays. Yeah. Didn't have a great day in special teams either. And I like Khalif Raymond a lot. I love his attitude. I love his mentality. I love how hard he works. He can be a four.
Yeah.
But this is a team with Corey Davis on it. Mm-hmm. Corey Davis has been hurt a lot in his career. This is a team with Adam Humphries on it. Yep. Adam Humphries has dealt with injuries. That was one of the problems for him last season, his first year here in Nashville. Khalif Raymond is a 4/5.
Yeah.
He's not a 3/4. If one of those guys goes down, you have a situation where you're taking somebody and trying to make him DeAndre Hopkins. Like, that's a 2 or 3, but you have to elevate him because you lost DeAndre Hopkins and you don't have another one here. Like, what you don't want to do is put a guy in the third wide receiver spot that can't hack it there and that's not going to help you.
No, and that's what you don't want. And you don't want to be bringing guys off the street either if somebody's injured, you know, and his development, you know, in that first game, I'll just contribute it to him being a young guy more than anything. You want to see growth throughout the year. They're hopefully not going to be counting on him a whole lot until the later part of the season because they want to work their guys in. You know, the number one and number two are going to get their touches regardless. And from that, Adam Humphries is playing his role. And you don't expect a lot from your young guys. He's got to contribute in a major way on special teams, as you said. And when his number called, he's got to gain the confidence of Tannehill and the offensive coordinator because those won't come to you very, very often if you don't make those catches. Like you said, he's the one he had on the sideline that he had to stretch for that one, and it was a little bit of a not a bad pass. It just wasn't on target for him, okay? So that's an issue that has to be – he's got to be catching after practice. He's got to be building a rapport with Tannehill as much as he can. You know, if the older guys have days off in practice or they're taking a couple reps off, he's got to maximize it. Practice is a game to him moving forward. And I've heard you speak so highly of him and listen to the shows before I come on, and you see he has the speed. He has the ability to make cuts and be in that Adams Humphries role if you're expecting that because he – that's that looked like where he's suited to be a good bit.
Yeah. He's got to make the most of the opportunity. And he had a great camp he had a really good camp. But the thing is, that doesn't matter. Like, it has to translate on Sundays. That's the way sports works. You can be the greatest player in the history of practice and still get cut or still just not be able to help the football team because points aren't scored during the week. No. They're scored on Sunday. Even though preparation is super important to success in this league, once you get out there, you got to get out there.
Yeah, we had a saying in Pittsburgh, of course, during the practice and in the springtime. Oh, don't be. We practice on the south side of Pittsburgh. Don't be a south side All-American. Well, number one, there aren't All-Americans in the NFL. But two, it was just a it was just a saying to say that, hey, look, what you do right here now is cool. Work on your tools, get what you need out of this practice. But you trying to swipe at the quarterback's arm, or you trying to give a shoulder to a DB coming across the field on a pick route is not what you need to be doing during this practice. I need to see you perform this on game day, and that is the biggest resume of all. The eye in the sky does not lie. And what you do on that field is either going to elevate you or push you down. And this is an ever-evolving league. It's true to what have you done for me lately. And it would be good to see him bounce back this week more than anything. And as I said before, with Corey Davis and A.J. Brown, they're going to get their touches. So when Tannehill does decide to come to you, you know, and especially after seeing the importance of Adam Humphries this past weekend, you know, with him being in the slot and him making – he was moving the chains. Your opportunities need to be taken advantage of in full force.
Yeah. I mean, Aaron Rodgers seemed to be one of the guys that I've seen do this the most. Like, he'll go to you.
Yeah.
But if you're not ready, you won't touch, you won't see it again because he loses trust in his mind for you. So he's not even looking at you as a progression unless there's just absolute. I mean, I've seen Aaron Rodgers throw the football out of bounds rather than throw it to guys that just dropped a pass.
And on the other side of that, if they're throwing, if they're targeting you and you drops a fine every once in a while, but my completion rate means something. You know, like, I'm not going to waste my arm strength on you if you're not going to complete those passes for me. Yeah, that's why, you know, a lot of people, I get cringy and I get mad at it because a quarterback in a bad position would rather take a sack than to throw a football and have an incompletion because that takes away from his completion percentage. Yeah. That's a true thing. So if I'm going to throw to you, I need to see that, hey, this either is going to be a breakup or you're catching this ball. I don't need you dropping the ball when I'm taken away from this offense, especially for a young guy. You have to earn your keep when you're in that position of trying to let the team see that you are valuable.
And they did promote Nick Westbrook to the 53 yesterday.
Yeah.
But if you heard anything about him in camp, he was dropping everything. Yeah. So that's but I guess you have to have somebody. They want to have a fifth guy out there on the active roster, but you want to feel better at wide receiver four when you have guys that have been hurt in the past, especially with COVID. Mm-hmm. Because what if AJ Brown just comes down with a positive COVID test and everybody has to step up from there and they're all a step above where they need to be, that can become a problem.
It can change the entire game plan. And as you said, with COVID, we had no chance to see what else was out there as far as talent, especially young talent, if we're going to bring somebody else in. And what has happened right now is team being able to protect guys. You know, the Bucks protected a kicker this week. Like, you get three protects, and if one of those teams have a really good solid player on their practice squad that they're able to hold on to, they will, and you'll be left with empty. You'll be left empty-handed because we don't know what other talent is out there right now, especially if somebody comes down with COVID during the week.
Have your say on our say, 615-737-1045 at 737-1045. Does Ramon Foster deserve a demerit for not knowing Rocky Boyman, who he played with and who we had on the program in the last hour? And we had Trey Wynn actually pop in on Twitter and explain how a half demerit should work. And we agree. Schaefer and I have kind of agreed on this one through the glass. Still not good news for Ramon, though.
Wow.
Not great, Bob.
Wow.
So Ramon, tough sledding there, bud.
You know what?
You need a Music City musical, my friend.
I know. Music City musical.
Is that Ashanti?
No, nobody caught that but you guys. And I felt like earlier you said that it was the Pac-10 also.
You mean the Pac-12?
No, you said that.
I did not.
Yeah,
I did not.
That's the merit.
We have a producer that can make that happen.
He's just shaking his head no because it didn't happen.
I'm telling you.
No. You get a demerit for saying that I said no. I don't know.
Screenshot or it didn't happen. It's 7:16. J. Martz and Ramon on 104.5 The Zone.
Saucy Nugs.
Goskowski actually had method behind that madness, but I'm glad he was able to make the kick with pants on.
Me too.
Saucy Nugs.
Yeah.
We might have saw some saucy
nugs. That's what I'm saying. We don't need to.
Some saucy nugs. Had he taken his pants off.
Nah, we certainly don't need to see anything boneless.
That's a great archive. Okay.
I'm just letting this Ashanti play.
Yep. My girl, okay.
722-1045 The Zone. J Martz and Ramon put an at behind it. My wife just sent me a picture of my dog's rear end.
Wow.
So I certainly got the right woman.
What's the context to that?
Demerit for her, okay?
I'm gonna read the text on air. She's been standing here with her booty in the air for 10 minutes. Hurts my back to look at her. She's eating a pizzle stick, a bully stick, as they're called, on the bathroom mat that she's destroyed. And she's like, front half of her body is laid on the ground, back half's just sticking as far up in the air as humanly possible.
You like that? You like that?
It's a straight up yoga pose.
Down face dog.
Pretty much.
Jackson, whatever y'all do at night, keep it away from the pets, okay? Please keep it away from the pets, man. It's clearly mimicking something, okay? Let's just be cool with that, all right?
At Ramon Foster, that's where you can find gems like that.
Was not expecting that.
At JMR Radio is where you can find skullduggery from me. Schaefer on Sports is the peanut gallery.
Ooh.
He's also the instigator.
Big time.
Constantly and knows it.
Is proud of it.
That's right. He's on Twitter there. We're at JMart's and Ramon. You can find us there. Anthony Herron will join us in the final segment of this hour. Andy Staples of The Athletic joining us next hour. This is interesting. We were talking about the holding penalties earlier.
Yeah.
NFL holding penalties fell to their lowest week one total in 20-plus years, down 78% from 2019, 58% from the average of the last five season opening weekends. And Koharski wrote a piece on his website at paulkoharski.com that's basically suggesting that that might not be a good thing if holding penalties don't come back as it relates to the Titans, which I find intriguing to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know holding penalties, unlike a lot of people, but Saffold says, we were talking about Saffold off the top, he said, we know there was a serious influx of holding penalties last year, so I'm sure they're trying to combat that.
Yeah.
Were they too lenient? Nobody really knows, but hey, we'll take them as we get them. But Paul writes, if it turns into a trend, the question becomes whether the Titans benefit more from getting called for fewer holding penalties for infractions on offense or get hurt more by their opponents getting called for fewer holding penalties against their pass rushers on defense. Last year in 19 games, Titans 24 holds. League average was 22.88. Titans benefited from the most. 37 holding calls against their opponents with 9 more dismissed. So they actually did benefit on that flip side. So if they're not calling as much, then they're not getting that added yardage or those extra deals.
That kind of, I don't know, that one's it's kind of sticky. I think it bodes a little bit more to the talent that they have on defense more than anything. You know, Jarrell Casey last year, if we're talking about last year, he's a slippery guy. He's one of those guys that you see him line up and it's like, okay, well, here we go. We're going to have a day. And the next thing you know, he's quick arming over you and going to the quarterback. Seeing the way the young guy Simmons is in the middle. That's something that can't be neglected. He's the guy that's going to push you and pull you to get to where he's going to. And especially having Clowney this year on defense, I think the players that they have more than anything is the reason that they had it. And not just simply because that they benefited off of it, but more than just it being a thing. I don't think it's just a thing. I think it's the players that they have. And you mentioning all of that, every time you say there's not there was a low count of holding calls, all I see is Roger Goodell pushing the button, add more, add more. That's all I see.
Well, I mean, you think about, and Koharski makes this point in his piece, that guys like Clowney, Simmons, Landry,
yeah,
let's say they're dominating. Let's say they're just really getting after it.
Mm-hmm.
But an O-lineman knows, and they're just not calling all this this year. And then they're getting away with stuff they wouldn't have. I love this because I know what side you're on, because you have to think like an offensive lineman. You're just like, let me tell you what they get away with all the time.
Exactly. You know how many times that deck doesn't get called against defensive line? I have to turn around at the umpire, and yes, I'm snitching on defensive linemen that hold, because they are the worst individuals on the field to say, hey, ref, he's holding. First play of the game, a run play, okay? Ref, he's holding. I'm like, oh, my gosh, just shut up and play the game. Like, I hate when defensive linemen do that. So and when I get an opportunity to call a defensive lineman out on that, yes, I'm all for it. And we're not trained to hold. You ask any of the starting five offensive linemen that's on the Titans right now. We're not holders at all, man. We just play a good, clean game. It's the ruckus makers on defense that calls their jerseys to get pulled like that.
That sounds like you're
I'm pro-line.
Not
is what I
being
sound.
Completely honest with us right now.
We don't hold, okay? But if that is an issue, of course, they're going to be the correction this weekend. If it's not, then we'll have to look at it and be like, okay, well, maybe they are letting the guys play a little bit more. And it'll be interesting to see this weekend. But I don't think there's a benefit or detriment to the Titans' defense, because I contributed to the type of players that they have. They have a type that they look for, guys that can bend, guys that can get to the edge. So those type of things are going to happen continuously, I think.
Rashawn Evans.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen whether or not there's anything coming from the league there. But that wasn't even something we were thinking about in the moment. But then it was brought up after the game. It's just like, oh, well, I mean, the league may have some discipline here as well. Adoree going on IR means he's not available this week. He's not available next week against three Minnesota.
Weeks. Yeah, at least 3 weeks for him when he goes on the IR.
Beasley was working on a side field at camp. We're still trying to figure out exactly how damaged up he is.
Yeah.
What, if anything, he can do. Clowney is still trying to figure it out. He even said so in his press availability earlier this week. He was just like, it's good to be out there, but I'm still trying to learn. And that's the deal. That's the thing that comes with camp when you're going to a new team, I would imagine. It's just, he doesn't know these guys. The communication's different. Mm-hmm. Everything is different, a little bit tweaked, and you just have to kind of find your – and that shows just how ridiculously talented he is that he made a couple of plays Monday anyway.
They put him in position to make plays. And you know, you saw where he lined up at. He wasn't doing his normal floating around technique, you know, that he's good at. And I'm sure that's something that's going to grow throughout the season. It's actually pretty cool that I'd say we kind of pumped the brakes a little bit on Vic Beasley because, one, we don't know what his issue is. But, of course, we know what type of athlete he is and what he brings to the field. However they're going about getting him prepped for the season, I think it's going to pay off. And I know we want to see him. We want to see him contribute. We want to know, okay, what exactly is going on? But I've seen these type of things happen before where guys just got to work through their issues. Whatever that issue is, it could be a knee, a hamstring. It could be a multitude of things. And the trainers know best in those situations. And also, for them to be spending this much time on letting him get acclimated or work through whatever he has to work through shows you what they expect from him when he's actually on the field. He's an extra nugget of, hey, let's cause a lot of ruckus for the guys on the opposing offense. So I don't see much of an issue with it. Of course, you want to know as much as you can because we're in this side of, hey, what's going on? But me knowing guys that's been in those situations, you just got to work through it sometimes, and you expect him to be ready when it's go time is all I got. When he steps on the field, we should assume he's ready to go.
One thing when we were talking about the Khalif Raymond issue and whether or not and kind of piggybacking off a good conversation that Midday 180 had yesterday about him being not a guy that could step up and be a 3 for you. And I look at the same thing. I think he's a 4/5, not a 3/4, and that can become a problem in COVID and – certainly with the injuries we've seen with guys like Humphreys and Davis in the past. But we do forget, Janu is really probably the 4, right? And maybe even you would look at Ferkser Pruitt made a catch, but he's known to be a blocker. But Ferkser, when he was asked to make plays last year, he generally made plays last year. So maybe there's a little bit more here. I still think it's probably an issue that they're going to address if Raymond has another subpar game. You talked about how he's got to show it on Sunday. And I look at him and I look at Gostkowski.
Yeah.
And I say, okay, magnifying glass is probably on those two guys right now. They are either earning their keep or they're, you know, earning their trip to becoming a water boy.
And that's a really good point about Jonnu Smith and the fact that the way the Titans offense is set up, as we all know, it's a run-first offense, or at least that's what they've been historically known as. And having Smith on the field, he does become your 4th in a sense. And we've talked about this recently, is the tight end has to be very quarterback-friendly in a lot of different ways, in picking up protections, of course, but also in blocking. And the last part of his job is catching. Now, he's an extension of the offensive line, but he's also the big athlete that's able to catch the ball and make plays, as we saw this past weekend. But the emergence of having another, I don't want to call Khalif a gadget guy, but his development is crucial and it's got to progress throughout the year. Either he's got to be really good on special teams and make his plays, or he's got to grow a little bit in his role as an offensive player, too. And maybe they're not expecting him to do a whole lot. They just want to see what he can do, you know, and put him in situations to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, a gadget guy, I don't hear gadget guy and also associate deep threat with that. But that's something Khalif can offer you because he's fast and he can run around down the field and make the play. But you still have to be able to catch it. The same thing with Josh Allen. Like, Josh Allen might have the greatest arm we've ever seen, but if he can't be accurate from 7 yards, it really doesn't matter. Yeah. He can throw it clear over the mountains, Uncle Rico.
Uncle Rico.
But can he hit
a crossing route?
Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
Outside the hash marks consistently.
Yeah, and that's the growth of the team. And we've always had the mindset of the stat of saying, hey, you want to gradually get better as the season get on. And true enough, that was his first showing with the lights on, with national TV seeing a young guy in Khalif Raymond. So you can't put a whole lot on him, but, you know, the Gaskowski situation is something that everybody's going to watch him, because he's in situations during the game where all eyes are literally on him. And the results of him doing his job, his reputation will carry him a good bit. But I don't know how long that reputation can last, when especially you're on a new team, a team that's historically has some issues in that area on special team as far as kicking and field goals. So if for anything, you know, like I know, the court of public opinion on social media will get you fired before anything else.
You and Seth kind of going at it a little bit here on Twitter. You know, we're not going to bring it on to the show, but it's all in fun, my friend.
All in fun.
All in fun.
Always.
Just to let you know. The poll question, does Ramon Foster deserve a demerit for not remembering he played in the NFL, with our guest from the first hour, Rocky Boyman, who also spent, I think, 4 years here in Tennessee with the Titans. 62% saying yes currently right now, 38% saying no. But we need to lay out the explanation, because you said, can you give me a half demerit for the Ashanti thing, right? Isn't that the one that you were trying to defend?
Yes, all right. It was.
And the reason why is because she was part of, what, the chorus?
The chorus. She laid down the vocals for J-Lo before the song was actually written. Before the song was actually performed. Mm-hmm. And they left some of Ashanti's vocals in the last finished product of I'm Real.
Well, I don't have the tweet up right now, but Trey Wynn hit us up and said, look, half demerit needs to be multiple people involved in a mistake, the same way a half sack is. And I'm pretty sure I didn't make a comment yes or no on the Ashanti. I'm pretty sure Schaefer didn't either. So I think that's a full demerit.
That is demerit.
Oh, there it is.
You know what? I'll take mine, because you're lonely in the corner over here as you are about to go to the next phase of demerits, which is a...
That would be a citation.
A citation.
And that's after three, right?
All right, so let's go down the list.
Yes, here we go. Right, let's do
this. So I actually took time to write this out.
Thank you very much.
Three demerits equals one citation. Five citations equals one violation.
All right, that's 15 demerits.
Four violations equals one verbal warning. Although on radio, everything's kind of a verbal warning.
That's like 60.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
We have not determined how many verbal warnings lead to a written warning. That is to be determined.
Written warnings would be a fun thing to tweet out.
Two written warnings equals a disciplinary review. And then after the disciplinary review, a full disadulation.
That's quite a word.
A disadulation.
That's quite a word. I feel like one of our listeners needs to start tallying the demerits, because we have to actually have some kind of a total here.
Yeah.
Because by the end of the show, we might all have 60.
We need a Twitter feed that is nothing but just a demerit tally board.
That's demerits. It. JNR demerits. There's your hashtag. Or not your hashtag. That's your handle. Go make it one of you. We can't pay you, but we appreciate you.
Yeah, you're at the house not doing anything else. Why not?
Yikes. In the basement?
Maybe.
Maybe.
It's J-Mart and Ramon. Put an @ behind it. You can find us there on Twitter. It's @ Ramon Foster. It's @ J-Mart Radio. I was about to say the wrong name for myself, but I stopped it.
Go ahead.
No, I see the look on your face. So you were waiting for that. We've got Anthony Heron, SiriusXM college radio host, former Iowa Hawkeye, Detroit Lion, Nashville Cat. We'll talk Big Ten football with him, maybe a little NFL as well. Stick with us. It's 7:38 on 104.5 The Zone.
Woo!
On 104.5 The Zone. It's J-Mart and Ramon. He's Ramon Foster, former Pittsburgh Steeler. Always Vol.
All Vol.
All Vol all the time. On Twitter, @ Ramon Foster. I'm Jason Martin, @ J-Mart Radio. Jonathan Schaefer completes our Voltron. We welcome in Had him on a couple of weeks ago, and of course, news has happened since that point in time. He's on Twitter at Big Ant Heron. Do we lead off just by saying former Nashville Cat, or do we talk about other things that you've done, Ant?
I'm good with former Nashville Cat. I think a lot of folks in the Music City have some fond memories of what went on there with the Cats at the GEC, I think, at the time, if I'm remembering that correctly, before, what is it now, the Bridgestone still, Bridgestone Arena?
Yep. It's still the Stone right now. So, yeah, you still know your area there. So just to lay it all out, Pac-12 Network, NBC Sports, 670 The Score in Chicago. You do SiriusXM College, everything under the sun, and you're right there in Big Ten territory. So tell us off the top what your reaction is to what happened yesterday.
I mean, it's exciting that the Big Ten was able to put some systems in place to get the season going again. You know, I think that, I suppose when I think of just like my perspective, just sort of in general on where we're at, I think we've come to a point where we need to be honest and recognize that at this point we're sort of viewing football players, revenue generators as essential employees. And I think that's a discussion that needs to continue to be revisited on how revenue can potentially, or compensation for college football players, college basketball players, can perhaps be enhanced beyond the same kind of scholarship that they had a couple decades ago when I was playing college football. But those things being said, a lot of folks deservedly so are genuinely excited about football being back, and the ability to test on a daily basis, the ability to do so in a cost-effective manner, and to have the type of cardiac MRI machines that now all the schools around the Big Ten are going to have access to that they didn't have a month and a half ago. All those things ended up equaling where we're at right now with the Big Ten planning to push forward and get a season going in the end of October. You still have, though, individual campuses where, like Wisconsin just a few days ago, they announced a restriction where there's no athletics allowed for a couple of weeks. Penn State shut down athletics for a bit because of some situations they're having on campus with COVID. There's a number of care. Iowa, the state of Iowa, became a hot spot recently. So Iowa football kind of, you know, had to pause some things as well. So there's still some problems that will be there in individual regions. And I think that's a part of why the conference wasn't in a position to say, okay, now that we got daily testing at the end of September, we'll be ready to play by the first weekend in October, because you do still have, you know, some individual issues on a number of Big Ten campuses where they still need to sort of get COVID straightened out to an extent, you know, where they can have players back on the field running into each other. But overall, it's a path towards football this fall, and that's what folks are excited about.
Hey, Ann, this is Ramon Foster here. You know, and a lot of, you know, the communication was done on social media with, you know, the Big Ten wanting to get back to play. How much of an influence do you think that conference's star players, you know, you speak about them being essential workers pretty much in a sense. How much of the influence of the star players saying they want to play, you think kind of pushed this decision or them to get done with research a little bit quicker?
I think it was big, Ramon. I think it ended up continuing to apply pressure to the main stakeholders, to the decision makers that were going to be responsible for this. Because when it came down to it, I felt like the initial decision the Big Ten made, I thought it was made in haste. I didn't think it was necessary at that point on August 11th to postpone the season. They had already put out this schedule that was extremely flexible, that would have allowed the conference to maneuver in a way that they needed to push the season back to a later date, like the SEC had already determined a later date, or even if you started the season early and you had to miss a game here and there, they could have made up those dates in a really uniform manner because of the way the schedule was set up, where like opponents having the same bye weeks. All that had been done 6 days before they decided to postpone. But then once that postponement announcement came, the pressure came from a number of athletes, from a variety of parents around the conference, certainly from media all around the country as well. And I think in the end, it at least applied enough pressure for the conference to continue to look for more immediate possibilities for how to get the season rolling again. I mean, that, you know, the folks, the presidents and chancellors, they weren't pleased with the idea of leaving literally over $1 billion with a B dollars on the table. So, I mean, I think avenues were going to be pursued no matter what, but it certainly doesn't hurt that you have the folks who are going to be participating, the players, coaches, and then beyond that, their family members who were putting public pressure on the conference as well.
Anthony Heron of SiriusXM College and ESPN Radio, I believe, in Chicago, joining us here on the show. Anthony, we see it everywhere, the political influence, the political pressure being put on by one side or the other. Maybe it's a president, maybe it's this. You being uniquely in that area of the country to really have seen it and look at some of the local reporting and talk to people over this last month since the 11th, since the decision was made, are people making too much out of the political side of this, or is there some legitimacy behind it?
I think when there's political pressure, it certainly just continues to sort of enhance the public scrutiny that a situation has. So, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily think that it didn't matter at all in the end, as far as like whether or not resources came from government. I think that's probably a more important factor in it, because in the end, I think regardless of any of the outside forces, if the Big Ten wasn't able to set up daily, rapid, cost-effective testing, they still wouldn't have made the decision they made yesterday. If they weren't able to get cardiac MRI machines to all 14 institutions across the 11 states that the Big Ten represents, I don't think the Big Ten would have made the decision to reinstitute the season yesterday. So the resources that have gone into it, I think that's a much bigger factor. The testing that's available, certainly the additional information, it's been an additional month and a half. More doctors have weighed in on myocarditis. They've continued to even enhance the folks who advise them as a conference on just the level of risk that they would be potentially putting not only the young, healthy student athletes, but also the coaches, the other staff members, the event personnel, clock operators, officials. Like, there's a lot of folks, you guys know, who have to be out there in the stadium at these events, even without fans, but who have to be at these events when football games are being put on. And so to have the additional information associated with what does myocarditis mean for athletes, how have we seen football games play out related to whether or not it does become a super spreader sort of event, just having folks in a venue at the same time, having the athletes on the field running into each other versus just being in each other's presence. I think those findings continue to make the Big Ten more comfortable revisiting that decision and putting them in a position where they say, you know what, if we can test everybody associated with these events every single day, then that at least it not only lets us know that the individual players may or may not be healthy or contract the virus, but the contact tracing end of it becomes much more simplistic than it ever would have before, when results were going to be more delayed than what they are right now. So I think that the political end of it, it matters in the end. I mean, when you look at some of the local governments from the different universities who were in there, you can certainly make a strong case that they don't necessarily support the notion of where the Big Ten is at right now as far as playing versus not playing. But in the end, the medical end of it, I think the risk tolerance end of it, is where things were really different in Pac-12 country and in a number of areas of Big Ten country. But now it feels like that risk is much more mitigated at this point than it was a month and a half ago because of some of the additional protocols and systems in place.
Awesome stuff. That's terrific insight, Anthony. That segment flew by. We have much more that we could have talked to you about. We really appreciate you making time, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
All right, looking forward to it myself, guys. Thanks for having me.
That's Anthony Heron, SiriusXM College, also ESPN Radio in Chicago. Well, we will talk about it ourselves when we come back. Also, you can call us, 615-737-1045. That's how you reach the program. That's how you have your say on our say, or on Twitter, at JMart and Ramon. Andy Staples joins us in about 20 minutes. You don't want to miss that. It is 754 on 104.5 The Zone.